The sermon today is the third part in a series exploring how faith is actually shared. And the surprising thing is that there are four critical things that actually share faith and values with people, and they're not necessarily the things you expected. And so you've got some notes. I've given you all sorts of take-home stuff, and there's stuff on the table as well. I want to start with a question. My question is, how did you get here? Often I ask this question at the new members class that we have for Emmanuel. We've got one next week. And I say, how did you get here? And every time, some smart Alex says, by car. Thanks. I'm actually asking you a deeper question. I'm asking you, how did you get to the place that you're at with your faith in Jesus or with the values that you have? I'm asking you, who got you here? There's this beautiful verse in Hebrews where it says, remember your leaders who first taught you the word of God. Reflect on the outcome of their lives and trust the Lord as they do. It actually asks us to just think back to the people who have shaped us and our values. I mean the people that have given us Jesus, the people that have given us positive, good things, to remember them. So I'm going to ask you to do that now, and I'm going to ask you simply to name somebody, either in your heart or out loud, tell someone nearby, who got you here. Someone who did something or was something for you or to you that ensured that you became the believer that you are or the person of values that you are. Can you just tell somebody nearby you who was pivotal in getting you here? Off you go. So what we're going to do today is think about how we got here. Who got us here? The people. And what did they do? What did they do? So I'm here because of love in action. I'm not here because somebody preached a great sermon one day. I'm here because people loved me. And when I think about who God is, I automatically think love now. That's where I've come to. And I've come there because people loved me. People who loved Jesus loved me. And I felt and saw and experienced Jesus Christ through people. And I reckon that's actually the case for most of you. Is that fair to say? That's how we get here. But there's something actually that's every bit as powerful as that. It's not just when people love you or people serve you. And be clear, we believe in a God who became a servant, right? There's something more powerful than that, something that helps us get to faith that's almost better than that, and that is, it was not just that I was served, it's not just that my mum loved me and did a prayer for me at bedtime or something, it's not just that I was served, but that someone shared the serving with me. One of my favourite places to remember is my dad's shed. Old-fashioned tin shed with a dirt floor. Any of you got a tin shed with a dirt floor? Right, I'm on. Tin shed, dirt floor, cobwebs, redbacks, funnel webs. Literally did have redbacks and funnel webs. A lot of homemade stuff in there. Homemade bench grinder. Old-fashioned arc welder in the corner, fishing rods, and you get the feel? The smell of diesel. Loved it. Buckets of bolts and unexplainable weird things that Dad started building that he's never finished. And I always loved my dad, the builder. Dad was just this guy. He could fix a photocopier with a piece of barbed wire. He could. He could fix a washing machine with a bottle opener. He was that guy. You know that guy? That's my dad. Not necessarily the guy that was going to preach a sermon or explain God to you, but the guy that could fix stuff. But the thing that my dad did, which is different, is it's not just that my dad served me, but that he shared the serving with me. And so from as young as I can remember, Dad would always be out there helping people. He'd be out there, a tree had fallen over in someone's yard, so he'd be out there with a chainsaw chopping up the tree and cleaning up their yard. Someone's washing machine was broken, he'd be fixing it, he'd be fixing their air conditioner, he'd be tweaking their TV, he'd just always be out at someone else's house fixing stuff, and at our house too, I must admit. One of my favourite things I used to do with Dad was fix people's roofs. Those were the days when you just did that. But the best thing that I ever did with Dad was get covered from head to toe in poo. I loved that. We had one of those snakes. If you don't know what this is, plumbers use big modern ones now, but we had a hand one, and someone's sewer was blocked, you'd get in there and clean it out. And I'll never forget one day being there, screwing down the snake down the sewer, and Dad with the hose at full bore. And then all of a sudden, kaboom, just covered in brown stuff from head to toe, and Dad too, and just laughing and laughing and going, this is great, we fixed their sewer. This isn't working for you, is it? I get all teary when I think of how good that was. Now the thing is, I didn't realise how special what Dad did, how special all that was, until later on when I started to think about who I am and who I want to be, and I realised that who I want to be is someone that helps people, because that's just what it is. That's just who you are when you believe in Jesus. He's God who helps people and serves people, and that's what you do. And my dad communicated that to me, not just by serving people, but by sharing that with me. And that's why I think what you guys are doing at Daily Bread is so powerful, because you're sharing service. And this is the key. This is how we actually communicate who we are. We invite people into that straight away. So sometimes people say to me, I don't know if we should let someone play in our band if they don't believe in Jesus. And I'm like, well, if they want to believe in Jesus, and if they're on the way, let's get them going. Let's get them serving straight away. Now, that's controversial for you guys over there, but we share the serving with them, and that's how they catch what it is to be a Jesus follower. It grows their hope and their faith straight up. So Pastors Dave Anderson and Dick Hardell, you can read it on this sheet, they say, service, that is helping people, puts wheels on your faith. It brings it into everyday life. It connects what we believe with tangible things. And many Christian adults can recall clearly a childhood experience of service, of serving with someone. And that was the real sermon. That taught us who God is. And listen to this. The Search Institute has found that adults who are higher in faith maturity, think about an adult that you know is high in faith maturity, not obviously me. Look at Doug. High in faith maturity. They are more likely to have been involved in service as a child or teenager, and such involvement is a better predictor of adult faith and maturity than child or youth participation in Sunday school, Bible study, or even worship services. So you can drag them to church every week, you can force them to go to some Bible thing that they don't like, you can make them go down there, and they're all good things. But you know what will actually help someone catch this mission that Jesus is on, just catch the faith, is go and help someone and let them help you help someone. Does that make sense? This is the third of the four keys. This is actually how people catch our values, not by hearing us talk about them, but by actually getting to do them with us right from the start. And, you know, I think it's great because it's just better than doing it on your own. Sometimes it's really easy to just get something done because you have to do it, you know. Like, I just have to get this done, and the kids just watching you. It's much deeper and it's more fun to get them involved too. When my little girl was 4 years old, I would drive her to childcare every day. It was one of those holy moments. Remember I talked about holy ground a couple of weeks ago for those who were here? The rest of you just go and look it up. Holy ground is when you just have little spaces in your life with someone you love. It might not be organized, but in my case, it was just driving my daughter to my little four-year-old to childcare every day. So good. Talking about all the silly stuff four-year-olds talk about. Super fun. And that was this holy space. It was great. So I used to drop her off to childcare and then settle in to work right next door at the church. But then a time came when there was a change to our routine because I would drop this little four-year-old off and then instead of spending a little bit of time getting her settled into her room or whatever and talking to the teacher, I'd just drop her off and I'd run every week. And where I was running, sorry, every week, I mean every day, and where I was running was to the nearby Wesley Hospital where one of my best friends was dying. And so for a number of months, I'd dutifully drop off four-year-old and then zoom off to the hospital to be with John just for a little while before I did anything else for that day. And one day, clever four-year-old goes, "Dad, where are you going now?" She's noticed the change. And I say, "I'm going to see John." "Oh, what's going on with John?" "Well, he's very, very sick." "Where is he?" "He's in the hospital." Now follow, you would not believe how many questions this four-year-old could ask. She, like, the Spanish Inquisition had nothing on my four-year-old. And so question after question after question, and I just explain as I can at her level what I can to her. And she says, the next morning, she says, "Dad, I'm going with you." And she's absolutely adamant, "I'm going with you to see your best mate, John." I'm like, "That's not a good idea, four-year-old. Maybe it'll be a bit, maybe you won't like it, you know." I said, "There's tubes in his nose and stuff." And she's like, "No, I'm going. I'm going because I want to see John." And I was like, I tried to stop her, but anyone who knows my four-year-old daughter knows you can't. So I take her and she's scared witless. She's shaken and she's also brave. She's like Sir Edmund Hillary climbing Mount Everest, you know, or Kathy Freeman on her training. She's like, "I'm going to do this." And she walks through that door, puffs her little four-year-old chest up, and she goes in and then she gets to John's room and she can barely get in the door. She's so scared and she looks and it's like beep, 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 you know, all the stuff, the wires, the tubes. And she could barely get in that room. And we only stayed for one minute, I reckon. And then I pulled the plug. I mean, letting her go, obviously not that. And bad choice of words there. So I let her go, is what I mean. And I say to her, "Look, you don't have to go. That's so brave. I'm so proud of you. Great. Wonderful. But you don't ever have to go. If you don't want to, I'll never make you. It's cool." I think that's the end of it. But what happens then is she goes to childcare and the teacher, who just happens to be a member of our church, overhears four-year-old in playground talking about John who got really sick. Teacher starts to talk to four-year-old and next thing, they hatch a plan and they start making a giant card. You know, beautiful stuff. And then all the other kids start making cards for John and we end up with this huge card for John filled with cards, a card of cards. Nice. And I get there that afternoon to pick up four-year-old and there it is carrying, you know, big, bulky, beautiful stuff. And I'm like, "Wow, that's amazing." And she says, "Yep." I said, "I'll give that to John tomorrow." "No, we're going." I'm like, "Yeah, okay. I'll take you tomorrow." "No, Dad, we're going now." "Okay, you don't have to go if you don't want to." "I'm going." So this time we walk in and we're still very, very scared and we squeeze Dad's hand. She's got a handshake like an old Dolby farmer, you know, just killing me. And squeezing my hand, scared, still shaken, in she marches. Looks death in the eye. Literally, she looks John in the eye and she hands him the cards. I can't remember if she could speak, but I'm pretty sure this could have been one of the moments, one of the only ones where she didn't have so much to say. I could be wrong about that. But she gives him these cards. And John lights up like 20 of my visits weren't as good as one from the four-year-old. He lights up and it means so much to him. And I think that four-year-old learnt more in that moment than all the rubbish that I've probably lectured her about for the rest of the four-year-old's life, don't you think? So this is what it is. It's not about being clever and saying, oh, now we're going to solve the world's problems and now we're going to feed all the poor of Africa and now we're going to do this and that. But all of you are doing simple little things in your life. It might be a friend that you care for. It might be just a neighbour that you cook when they're sick. It might be simply that you see something that you want to give to, like you decide after a recent flood that you're going to donate to the Red Cross or to World Vision. You just involve the kid in that. Just involve someone young. You're all doing stuff already, right? You don't feel guilty right now and go, I'm going to go out and change the world and start 20 things. Because what I'm talking about is simply just the little things that we do for people that help them. And it's simply grandparents. Just invite, let a young person help you help someone. If you're making stuff for Watoto, you know, you guys are doing all your cool, I don't know what you call that, craft. Maybe just let them help you. Don't force them to help you. Ah, no, that's not the point. Let them see how much you love to do it and invite them into something meaningful. That's actually how we share our values, is not by telling people so much, but it's actually by inviting them to experience our values with us. I think that's the key. Now, finally, I'm just going to say this to you. It's really fun. It's much more fun to mow the lawn and let a seven-year-old just experience, well, let a five-year-old just experience just pushing it for one or two rows. It's much more fun. So as I finish, I'm just going to ask you to think and brainstorm. What serving can you share? On the handout, there's heaps and heaps of examples. I'm not going to go through all of them. Can you think of something like maybe collecting rubbish, Clean Up Australia Day, inviting someone over, serving them, just donating to the Emmanuel College Food Bank or donating to Emmanuel Church's Mustard Tree. When you go shopping, you just buy the baked beans, buy the extra pasta sauce and involve them in buying that. See, they've just helped you help someone. As I finish, I simply want to ask you, what serving can you share? That's it. So I might just ask you to talk about that with each other. Maybe it's visiting Emmanuel Gardens. Maybe it's just someone in your family that's unwell that you're caring for. Can they be involved? Over to you. What serving can you share? I'm going to give you a couple minutes to discuss that and band when you're ready, when you think we should stop talking. And if you want to talk first, that's up to you. When you think we should stop talking, you're the boss. We'll just go with what you do. I will say before the band do sing, it's a brand new song. It's old to some of us and new to others. So yeah, over to you, everyone. What serving can you share?